As Caesar believed this was an important matter, he started explaining some of its mysteries. Oh, everyone wants more happiness and joy but no suffering, ATM, he said. Oh, when people suffer, they know very well that they would do anything to get MD of this feeling. Suffering therefore makes us seek a way out. This means that we must reevaluate many aspects of our lives, including those that used to make you happy before. A first observation would be that we need to act when faced with suffering. It makes us move, and from this point of view, it has a structuring role because, when we want to overcome trouble, we strive to find solutions. Okay, but what is the mechanism of suffering? Why does it appear? AI interrupted Caesar. AI think it is essential for me to know the causes in order to reach the solution. AO Whitmer right, but right now your understanding is only intellectual and dosner TMT come from the heart, from deep introspection. The most known causes of suffering, as we understand them in the current society, are the absence of what we want or the presence of what we don't TMT want. You can, for example, suffer because of the absence of someone you love or because of the presence of someone who makes you feel uncomfortable. You can also suffer because your work is too hard, because you want more free time, but also because you have no job. Suffering has many faces and degrees of intensity, but it surely makes us get closer to the essence of life in order to understand it and always relate to it. AI felt a short circuit in my brain. AO, how is this possible? AI asked. AO, it seems masochistic. AO, hear Whitmer wrong because you confuse things a bit, A Caesar said calmly. AO, suffering exists, but pain can't TMT make us feel joy as in the case of masochists. Even though nobody wants to suffer, suffering can play a very positive role in our lives. And here you must understand that, whatever the form or origin of suffering, the solution we find to remove it will always be determined by our attitude towards that suffering. Unfortunately, some people don't TMT think it has any meaning and thus even commit suicide. Suffering, however, can be our savior if we consider it a springboard for the transformation of our lives. The solution we find to replace suffering must be viable, powerful, beneficial and constructive. Otherwise, suffering will go on or may appear later in the same direction. Proof of the fact that suffering can have a positive role, if we look upon it maturely, is that it can create within us a feeling of compassion for those who suffer and from here the unselfish help that we can also offer them. AI had read something about Buddhism on this subject, but I was only at the beginning. AO know from some of the books he have read that Buddha sought the origin of suffering and, after he reached a certain understanding of its mechanism, he felt compassion for those who suffered. AO TMS normal, A Caesar added, AO because compassion is a natural consequence of these searches. The more someone displays true compassion, the more we can say that the respective person has discovered some essential elements about suffering. Buddha reached the conclusion that ignorance is always involved in this process. AO in other words, if I suffer, it TMS because of my ignorance. But where does ignorance come from? AI asked, paying attention to Caesar TMS explanations. AO suffering and ignorance appear when our understanding differs from reality. Unfortunately, reality can't TMT be perceived as being separated from the mind because this acts like a channel of our perceptions of everything around us. Of course, we can only see through our own channel, and this is why they say that a beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder atm, or that a we all see the world in our own way. Atm, and this leads me to an important conclusion I wanted to share with you. In order to solve the problem of suffering, we should not TMT emphasize the symptoms but rather the ability to perceive correctly everything around us. In a way, we can call it judgment. AI noted that judgment is an attribute of the mind and that, if the mind is not clear, judgment is also altered. AO, this really is a problem, ATM Caesar agreed. AO, if the mind is clear, the human being can be more aware of what is going on, can accept reality better and thus suffering will be greatly reduced. But, I want you to know that nobody can offer us this clarity of the mind because we already have it within us. We just need to let ourselves be guided by a new way of seeing things and situations. Actually, when the mind becomes clearer, the causes of suffering are diminished as well. Ao, if you want, you can imagine the relation between mind and ignorance as follows. In the mind, ignorance is like a malfunction which, through other aspects that generate it, blocks our correct understanding and thus triggers suffering. Ao, and what are the aspects that ignorance generates in our minds? Ai asked curiously. Ao, first of all, there's confusion, which is about the same with the foggy mind you were speaking about earlier. I could also mention devotion, rejection, and especially fear. Ao, all these generate suffering, which, as you know very well, appears and disappears and then appears a section again, and thus can go on forever if it is not maturely understood. Ai was thinking about the most mature way of understanding suffering, but instead of this, I asked, Ao, what is the first thought that should come to our minds when suffering appears? A, after a short pause, Caesar answered, Ao, our suffering forces us to admit the existence of a void in our being which continuously pushes us to try to fill it. ATM, he said before standing up in preparation to leave. Ao, for example, a bad relationship with one of the parents during childhood can alter our feelings and thoughts towards that parent. These negative impressions will be perpetuated over the years, and thus each of our thoughts of that parent will be impregnated with that resentment. It's almost a natural phenomenon. Nevertheless, a better option would be to consider the positive aspect of that relationship as well. We can't change the painful experiences of our childhood, but if we become capable of looking at the relationship from another point of view, namely from a superior and positive one, then suffering will be greatly reduced. Although I could see that Caesar wanted to leave, I was burning with desire to find out other interesting aspects on this delicate matter. He explained to me that he actually wanted to give me time to rest before our departure the following day. I also looked at the time and saw that it was past midnight. I was so caught up in the discussion that I had almost forgotten that a crucial moment in my life was near. I asked Caesar to answer one more question, and he accepted with a smile. Ao, but if we know all these things or we have the slightest clue of them, why do we suffer so often? Ai asked. Ao, sometimes this happens because of things that have no real importance. Ai, supporting his hands on the back of the chair, Caesar answered in a very inspired way. Ao, most of the times, suffering comes from the fact that we identify a small fragment of our eaves with the whole. Too often do we identify ourselves with external aspects, especially with isolated troubles. Too often do we choose to occupy our minds with unpleasant memories, which we tend to remember for a long time to the disadvantage of situations when we felt happy. This is not about ignoring suffering, but about trying to consider it in a larger context. It's like when a shoe feels uncomfortable. Of course, you seek to find out the reason for this, but at the same time, we have to consider the good aspects as well. For example, you must not necessarily throw away the shoe immediately. Ao, what if our suffering is very profound? I've met people who are almost on the brink of desperation and lack of faith. Ai insisted. Ao, when our suffering is so profound, we won't seek its origin, think of details, or interpret the subtleties of the signs that appear. We have to act almost immediately to alleviate the pain and strong emotions it determines. If someone is delirious from a high temperature, will you ask them to draw a list of the different feverish states they feel before you act to help them? It's clear that you have to do something to decrease the temperature. It's the same when a person suffers greatly. First, we have to alleviate their suffering and encourage them. Such alleviation is a process through which we must act so that emotions cease to overwhelm us. During this stage, we must be receptive to any method which is efficient, but alleviation should be the first step. Ao, okay, but what happens afterwards? Ai asked. Ao, afterwards, we'll try to solve the problem because we can't alleviate suffering forever. If we don't do anything to solve the problem after we alleviated suffering, difficulties will definitely appear again. After we control the intense negative emotions and obtain a state of relative calmness, we have to start looking for the origin of that emotion, of the suffering itself. The solution can appear, For example, when he contemplated a detailed retrospective of that situation. Ao, does this mean that suffering simply disappears once we find out its causes? Ao, no, itms, not enough to know only the causes of suffering in order to eliminate it, atm, Caesar said in a serious voice. Ao, but it can be reduced if we understand the process that caused it. Unfortunately, the different circumstances of life can reactivate an older problem, even if we understood it perfectly. We really eliminate suffering only if the problem does not TMT occur for a long period of time. This method uses the deepest aspects of our being and, as I said, itms, based upon a clear mind and judgment. Every method which can alleviate suffering is precious, but its effects are only temporary. This is why I insist that you understand that the techniques that help develop the quality of our minds are especially important, as they contribute to the elimination of ignorance. Nevertheless, the essential problem is to know if suffering can be completely eliminated. Success in this direction will only be obtained through a deep transformation of the respective person who, no matter the particular events that cause suffering, will break the original bond with suffering forever. I was telling you that, in order to accomplish this, you must first identify the causes of suffering and then find a remedy based upon a certain mental clarity. Ao, this means that if we achieve mental clarity, we break the original connection with suffering and it no longer occurs, Ai said, following the logical reasoning. Ao, no, thatatms, not true, atm, Caesar corrected me. Ao, clarity is not TMT enough to eliminate the origin of suffering. There are no techniques that completely eliminate it, because understanding the primary cause that generated suffering is not TMT everything. Something else is also necessary. In order for you to understand this better, remember that suffering, no matter how intense it is, can never fully overwhelm us. Itms, true that it can profoundly affect us, but there is still a hidden space itm where it can never reach, no matter how profound it is or seems to be. Even when a person suffers greatly and is being tortured by the intense pain generated by suffering, part of them still does not TMT suffer, but actually knows both the cause and the solution to the problem. This is a fundamental aspect in understanding the essence of evolution, because successfully overcoming a great suffering means making an important step on the ladder of personal evolution. The closer we get to this hidden place in our hearts, the less we'll feel suffering, because we at TMLL no longer identify ourselves with it. Suffering does not TMT disappear, but the peace and quiet specific to this place, which is the origin of life, will fundamentally comfort us. If we seek to connect to this peace and if we profoundly identify ourselves with it, we'll suddenly feel relaxed and quiet, even if pain persists. Ao, in this respect, I still feel something is unclear, Ai said. Ao, if suffering diminishes, is not TMT it normal for the pain to diminish as well? A, Caesar shook his head. Ao, pain and suffering are indeed connected, but not in the way you think they are. For some people, a small pain is accompanied by great suffering, while others suffer less in spite of a great pain. The explanation is that while some people intuitively find the hidden focal place that I told you exists in every one of us and can at TMT be touched by suffering, others are still far from it and continue to go yet further away. As they are not aware of the existence of this real and very subtle place within themselves, the suffering they feel is amplified. It is like a voice that always tells us to seek the lost conscience that we once had. This voice can be assimilated to what people generally call the voice of the heart. Atm and Yatm realized that Yatm am actually talking about the divine self that exists in each of us. This is actually the sacred place where suffering can't TMT reach us. Caesar finished speaking and looked at the clock again before telling me that we needed to rest before departure. I thanked him with all my heart for his valuable explanations and advice, and we agreed that I was to be ready for departure at 6 o'clock in the morning. Thinking that I had clarified many aspects that I had not been able to understand previously, I went to sleep happy and at peace. It was like a psychological setting, given the fact that in the next period of my life I would be confronted with, as I was led to understand, special surprises and events. I understood very well that Alpha Base was a very important knot for the secret operations and plans of the state, but, even if I did not know any of them, I felt very well integrated and protected because I knew that the goals were purely beneficial. I fell asleep quickly, thinking of Mukundi. Next headline, the departure. When I came down to the training room in the morning, I was told to go to the heliport outside where I saw a large helicopter. Next to it there were three younger men talking. Next to them, there were a few special army boxes and other bags, objects and equipment which I could not identify. I understood that I was looking at the equipment prepared for our expedition. After an exchange of polite and kind greetings, I realized that two of the men were American and the third one was Romanian. A simple calculation showed me that, if no changes came up, our expedition would be a party of five that included myself and Caesar, the leader of the expedition. One of the two foreigners was an officer in the U.S. Navy, a lieutenant to be more precise. The other one was a civilian who introduced himself as Aiden and, to be honest, I felt a bit puzzled by his presence. He was of medium height, his hair was light brown with blonde nuances, and he looked disorderly with a restless look. What struck me most about him was that he was quite thin and always agitated. I did not understand his role in the expedition, but I suspected Caesar would explain it to me later. The third person was Lieutenant Nokoaro Atilda Copyright, an officer working for Department Zero who, as I later understood, was one of the most important members of that secret service. The other American introduced himself as Drew. Just like Lieutenant Nokoaro, he was part of the commando team from the first expedition sent through the tunnel 2 years ago. He was of Mexican origin and, because I speak Spanish very well, I talked to him a bit in his native language. This was a nice surprise for him and the atmosphere immediately became very friendly. In the meantime, the pilot of the helicopter had come from the same direction where Caesar was, carrying sheets of paper which he was carefully reading as he also wrote something down. He got into the helicopter and we soon heard the first movements of the rotor which signaled that we were about to take off. I saw four soldiers arriving. They loaded the equipment in the large helicopter and we got into place behind the pilot in order to avoid the strong air current that was already starting to amplify. The noise had become quite loud and we could only hear each other if we screamed. This is why we preferred to wait for Caesar TMS return in silence. After almost 2 minutes, we saw him quickly exiting the building where his office was as he headed towards the helicopter. Tall and well built, he inspired an extraordinary feeling of safety and self-confidence. I felt a wave of affection flooding my soul which I directed towards him with gratitude. I was aware that destiny had connected me with secret threads to this man and I was determined to follow him anywhere he would suggest. My last couple years of experience have shown me that he was one of the wisest men and his integrity, honesty and good intentions made everyone trust in him. All these qualities were doubled by an extraordinary subtle force which one could immediately feel when he was around. I have often asked myself how it was possible for him to achieve by himself that level of spiritual evolution and understanding of the fine aspects of society. As far as I knew, I could guess that this was mainly due to special merits he had in other lives and this is why now it was quite easy for him to evolve rapidly. As he once confessed to me, however, the key to his success was the special perseverance in the practices he imposed upon himself where he refused to let himself be discouraged by his lack of success. When he did feel such thoughts appearing, he told me that he would never surrender to them and that he would fight harder to strengthen his will, his concentration and his aspiration to succeed. The most important aspect he underlined was that he has always focused all of his inner force towards God and has never ceased to relate to what was pure, fine and evolved in his being. His words have remained in my memory as if imprinted in letters of fire that are very important. Don't TMT ever forget that every one of us hides the height and mysterious depth of eternity which will be revealed to you as soon as you have a correct vision of everything around you. This idea has always guided me with success and without fear of error. And I can tell you more than that, this is the only thing that can truly make you happy. I remember that, In my ignorance, I asked Caesar if that was not just a quality of chosen special beings. With patience, Caesar explained to me that I was wrong and that this idea limited Manatee's access to the eternal happiness we all long for. Every person exists, among other things, to perform a specific function. Most of the times, this function is not understood and men lose themselves in society, forgetting the main reason they are alive. We can only know God, who is unique, if we are also from a single unique reality. For this, we all have to become one with ourselves, to melt in our hearts with ourselves. Everything else that happens in this world is secondary. I must confess that, at the time, I did not understand the meaning of his words very well, but I could guess that there was a deep truth behind them which one could not reach by using common ways of perception or analysis. But now, my spiritual horizon was considerably larger and I was able to realize, at least in theory, that this was the only correct direction mankind should follow in order to achieve balanced lives and true happiness, all of which comes from within. As I deeply concentrated on these memories and personal reflections, I realized that Caesar had come next to the helicopter and signaled the pilot to take off. He sat next to me and handed me a pair of special soundproof headphones which he told me to put on. He also put on a pair of headphones and I could immediately hear his voice, which was very clear of the background noise caused by the helicopter. The headphones were made especially for this purpose and included an internal radio amplifier with a small antenna. Caesar explained to me that this was part of the equipment brought by the American Space Tunv partnership started 2 years ago with the Romanian government. Now, I could simply speak into the small microphone which was tied to my neck and I could use the flight time to find out from Caesar some details about our expedition. According to the strict protocol, I had not been told anything so far. I first found out that Hayden was an expert genius with computers and especially with regard to decrypting. He was a permanent employee of the Pentagon and his life would progress only between the walls of different secret bases around the world where acquired by the military and economic interests of the USA. I was astonished that this person could resist such rhythms and conditions of life, but looking at him closer, I realized that he seemed to live in a different universe, which only he knew. AO, the Pentagon sent him on this mission because we need some special measurements and very complicated computer analysis, ATM Caesar explained to us. AO, we were told he was the best to accomplish this. The other two are here to ensure that we travel in the best conditions and to help with unforeseen situations. AO, what is my purpose here? AI asked with a certain legitimacy and, at the same time, a definite amount of amazement. AO, officially, the expedition chart states that you are a consultant on esoteric matters and this is not far from the truth given your role in contacting Dr. Xun. In reality, I took advantage of the situation which was especially created in order to request your presence on this team. I know this will greatly help you with your writing, and trust me, you'll be greatly impressed. After a couple of a governmental ATM hesitations, I finally got the approval from my superiors. As yet I've already told you, things are more complicated, but I won't go into detail now. Next headline, precious memories. For a while, we flew without speaking. Traveling fast and at a relatively low altitude, I was looking at the landscape which featured hills and mountains. We did not pass over any city and that made me happy because I felt that we were closer to nature and to our destination. I could see houses scattered over the hills, large agricultural areas and forests that were already starting to be part of the landscape. I wondered what these places looked like thousands of years ago and who lived there so long ago. What were these people preoccupied with and how did they live their lives? In the fragments of holographic projections I had seen in the huge chamber inside of the mountain, I had the chance to find out that our mountains were the main location where the ancient population of this territory lived. It was practically the space where they organized their activity. The fields were almost uninhabited. As far as I could tell, what I had seen was the presentation of a reality of almost 8 to 9,000 years ago. In those unique moments I lived through in the projection chamber and had the opportunity to look at the amazing succession of holographic images, I was shocked by many aspects and truths that have up to now been willingly hidden by scientists throughout history without letting the masses know them. I was not allowed to reveal most of these aspects. The final part of the presentation included more details on the territory of our country from the past 10,000 years, according to an approximate estimation. Because I was allowed to write about some of those images, I want to do so now before I go on with the events that followed and which were completely puzzling. What surprised me about the holographic images was the small number of inhabitants. Practically speaking, there were no collective living areas and no towns or citadels. People lived almost exclusively on the mountains and, as far as I could tell, the only natural products they enjoyed were obtained from sheep and bees. Sheep were larger than the ones we know now, but people were taller as well. I estimated their average height at about 2 meters in the case of men and a bit less in the case of women. Apart from agriculture and sheep herding, nothing they did was similar to our current lives. They were silent almost all of the time and lonely, preferring to remain with their eyes closed in a profound meditation. In one of the images, I saw a man stopping while he got water from the river with a bucket. He remained on his knees with his eyes closed, and even though the bucket had been taken to the water and brought a few meters down the river towards the shore, the man did not move from his position. Contemplation, especially an inner one, seemed to be their only interest. Women prepared the sheep milk brought to them. They did not cook because they ate only dairy and apiculture products. Sometimes I saw that they did something that nowadays could be seen as a correspondent of sewing. Actually, women used a very simple wooden device to weave some sort of a long white shirt made of sheep wool, but very soft and not very thick. They all wore the same garments. The shirt was a bit over the knees and open at the chest. At the waist, they wore a girdle which was also made of wool. As far as I could tell, their houses were made of one room with a very tall roof like a pyramid. The only material they used was wood. The entrance to the house was done directly from outside and through a tall opening shaped as a semicircle. There were no doors or windows. I did not see any dogs, pets or wild animals. Their lives were extremely simple and peaceful, austere, I would say, but I could nevertheless see that they were well above our current condition. Their movements were very noble, their actions very precise and never in a rush. They gestured rarely, even during their daily work, but they were very efficient. They were never in a hurry, leaving the impression that they had all the time in the world, and I must admit that I also had this sensation because, in spite of their apparent slow motion, they still managed to do everything they set out to do. I noticed that they always, with no exceptions, finished what they started. Time seemed to pass more slowly and days seemed longer, even for the summary projection I was looking at. Often, during the day and in the middle of the activities they performed, men would suddenly sit on the ground and close their eyes, remaining in a state of deep contemplation for hours. Afterwards, they would immediately continue their activity from exactly where they had stopped. I did not notice any special habits or rituals, but in the evening, women would climb the top of the mountain and, facing the setting sun, they would raise their hands obliquely next to their ears in a gesture of giving that was at the same time acceptance of what life was offering them. This was the only manifestation of gestures that I could equate in any way to a prayer, an invocation or an unconditional abandonment to divinity. I am saying so because I did not notice any representation of a deity, an altar, or any symbol of religious practice. It seems that they related to the universal source directly and simply with no intermediation. Their lives were TM entirely spiritual and dedicated to continuous meditation whether they were working or relaxing. In the evening, the couple reunited because, during the day, the man was away in the mountains with the sheep. With concentration, he walked slowly before the herd which followed him without straying away. When he reached a proper place, the man would remain standing for a while with his eyes closed, slowly rotating at certain intervals of time in the direction of the four cardinal points. I estimated that this could last, in our current view of time, between 1 and 2 hours. He would then sit on the grass and remain there without moving for hours, his eyes remaining closed. Nothing could disturb him, not even the sun, the wind or the rain. At a certain moment, I saw a close image of a shepherd meditating, but his eyes were not closed.